pick a window. This is the Defenestrate Media Network.
Oh, wow. I don't know about the costume, but that's some set of wheels.
Hi, I'm Marv Wolfman, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
You're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I'm your host, the radioactive professor of all things comic book, J.C. Carter. Joining me today on the show, my super friend, beaming down from the bridge of his own private enterprise, our very own Admiral James Tiberius Batman Laird, Jeff Bell.
There's nothing wrong with punching Nazis.
Not one thing wrong with punching Nazis.
Nope. If that's something Captain America taught me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why we have them, is to punch them.
That's why we have Captain America, is to remind us to punch them.
Exactly.
That's all I got.
Yep.
That is.
Oh, boy. What a week. All right. How was your week?
A bit of a surreal week. I spent some time with my mom doing yard work, which is weird. I remembered to put on sunscreen, so I was able to sleep that night.
Yes, that's important, especially with your current condition.
Yeah.
You don't need to aggravate that condition any more than it already is.
Yeah, I got the cancer down there going, give me more sunshine.
Give me more, come on.
Yeah. No.
Meanwhile, you're in SPF 5000, you know, covered, slathered all over your body. even the body parts that are covered with clothes. It's like, no UV for you, motherfucker.
Yeah, I'm using a high SPF zinc oxide.
Mm-hmm.
So you put it on, and if you don't take the time to rub it in, you look like an 80s nose on the beach. Remember the
right?
Remember the zinc oxide?
The zinc oxide. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember that.
The lifeguards at the pool. Yeah.
I did it when I was a lifeguard.
Yep. Big old hunk of zinc oxide right on your nose. It's kind of fun.
Yep. That's because every time I got a sunburn, my nose would peel.
Yep.
And then you just look leprous. And as you know, I had an interest in the ladies back when I was young.
Yep.
And no one wants to look leprous when you're trying to seduce a lady. Because I think you'll recall, I always ran after women that were significantly older than me.
Yeah, that's true. It's quite true. Sometimes, so they're shocked. Wait, you're not 18?
I did. I'm going to be vague as shit for a sec. But I did a play, and I was stage managing a play for a sizable venue in our area. I'll leave it at that. Yes. It was back when I had my little motorcycle, and that's how I got around everywhere. And there was a woman in the play who was playing one of the leads, and I was very flirty with her. You know, I thought she was really pretty. She was really talented, and man, she could sing. Oh, fuck it. Statute of limitations. It was anything goes. And she was playing the unsinkable, what's her name? Molly Brown?
Unsinkable Molly Brown?
Yeah. And anyway, so one post play, we're all kind of hanging out on stage, whatever. Some of the actors are there. The tech crew's there. We're enjoying beverages, to which at that point in my life, I was 16, was Boone's Mountain Berry.
Yes.
And we went and got a case of that, and we were passing it around, and everybody was having a good cheap time. And she and I left together, and I followed her back to her place, and one thing led to another, and coitus happened. At which point we were talking about something, and I mentioned, oh, when I was a kid, blah, blah, blah. And obviously it was a recent
It was like
thing
3 years ago,
like 4 or 5 years ago. She's like, wait, how old are you? And I was like, oh, I'm 16. And she had a full-fledged panic attack. She's like, oh my god, oh my god. And I'm like, what? This is my fault.
I, I knew what I was coming for. I knew what was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think I'm going to do? Tattle? Don't worry about it. And she was coldly polite to me for the rest of the run.
Yes, I imagine so.
She was in her 30s. She's in her prime. I was 16. I was in my prime. It was a good time for young men to, I don't know. It was bad and wrong, and it shouldn't have happened. But in her defense, it was entrapment. I was gorgeous.
Yes.
And I rode a motorcycle.
You're gorgeous. You had this voice at 16.
Yeah.
The voice you have now. And you were that tall at 16. You'd hit your growth spurt by that point.
Yep. Had my long hair.
Like, my growth spurt didn't happen until I was 18 and out of school. Because I remember I go to the 5-year reunion. Everybody's like, are you taller? And I'm like, I don't know. Am I? And they're like, yeah, you're a lot taller than you were. And it turned out I was. So,
That's fun. Just like Michael Jordan. What's that?
Hadn't even paid attention to the fact that I shot up like 2 inches or 3 inches. You know, I just.
Your pants knew.
Yeah. I bought new clothes, but I just figured they'd shrunk or something. I was just so used to. I was used to getting new jeans every year because I was always outgrowing them, right? And I was like, oh, I outgrew them. Okay. And I was like, must have shrunk or something. And then it didn't even occur to me that I should have stopped growing 2 years before or something, you know?
Well, I'm glad that means you and I hit our growth spurts at around the same time.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Oh, youth. Wasted on the young.
Yep.
Yeah.
I didn't quite have the confidence you did to shag 30-year-olds until I was in my 20s, but, you know, that was a different story.
You know, it only occurs to me in my late middle age that that was extremely cocky.
Yeah. You were the cock of the walk at that age, I remember.
I had no idea.
There was nothing that could stop you. And I'm like...
Well, non-consent stopped me.
Yeah, that did stop you. But, I mean, it wasn't just, it wasn't just getting a girl. It was everything. You were cocky as fuck. And I'm like, life really knocked your ass down, didn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely has.
Really, really knocked away the cocky little fucker you used to be, or big fucker you used to be. You were never little. But yeah.
I miss it.
Yep.
I wrote a piece the other day.
There are moments I'm like, I expect that because I've known you for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay. You know, I have to think about it for a second. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. This is Jeff with maturity.
Yeah, I don't care for it. I liked being oblivious much better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's just it. Yeah, I did. I wrote a piece here for something I'm working on about imposter syndrome the other day and how I didn't have it until I got married the first time.
Yeah.
And that all the deep, dark, evil voices that plague me day after day now pretty much stem from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oops. Not to blame it, not to pretend that I was perfect in that relationship, because I most certainly was not. I just, certain aspects of it knocked down my confidence, and I've never climbed back out, which is, again, why gentlemen should seek therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get over your shit. Get your confidence back. Talk to a therapist. I'm working on it. We should move on. We're getting boring.
We should. Yeah. I had... My big news was because I was going to buy a filing cabinet off of Amazon to start storing my comics in. And it was about $200, and it would be shipped to me, and I'd have to assemble it. But the more I kept thinking about it, and I was reading reviews, and I was looking at the thing, I'm like, I don't think I'm going to get my money's worth out of this thing. And I was really worried because it was flat-bottomed, the drawers. Great to store comics in, but I also know that makes them weak. You know, you'll get the little bend. You'll get the curve in the middle. It'll warp it. And then I saw on Facebook Marketplace a guy selling a whole bunch of these long file cabinets he had from someplace, some job site, $75 a piece. Just had to go get it.
Nice.
So I arranged for a friend with a truck to help me, and we went and picked it up. I thought I was getting a 42 wide. It turns out it's just a 36 wide, which is fine. But I also think I'm going to be selling some more comics to Roger next week.
So. It's not a bad idea.
Yeah, because I don't think I'm going to have the room. But again, this filing cabinet is designed to keep me under control with how much I spend on the printed comics, because I really should be buying a lot of this stuff digitally and then picking up the trade later if I really want to keep reading the story again. Because so many times I'll buy a comic, read the story once, put it in a bag and board and throw it in a box, and that's the end of it. You know, I never look at it again. So I took a lot of those to Roger already, and I'll probably take a few more.
Yeah, I got a
Meanwhile,
bunch
of... I'm forced to go through the regular batch of comics and get them organized and cataloged. And I was like, oh, look, I do have Wolverine, was it 66?
Nice.
The first Old Man Logan, I do have that one. And that one is now going, that is now in the stack of comic books to be slabbed.
Nice. Very nice.
Yep, first Old Man Logan. I'm like, oh, gotta have that one. Turns out I got the whole Old Man Logan. So, yeah. If you don't need number one, I got the rest.
Yep, there you go.
Yep. But yeah, let's do some comic book news.
Okay.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
According to Bleeding Cool News, Dark Horse Comics has decided to voluntarily recognize employee union. I personally would have used the word recognize. But what are you going to do?
Is Rich Johnston a, you know, is he a Brit?
No. It's recognize is used with both spellings throughout this article. My guess is he doesn't have Grammarly to tell him which one to pick.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Dark Horse Comics.
You're both technically right, but usually word will tell you that, you know, if it geolocates you, geolocks you and says, oh no, Z. You spell it with a Z. Yeah.
Well, color has a U. Theaters are E.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, certain things are true no matter how America spells shit. So, but Dark Horse Comics will voluntarily recognize the Dark Horse Workers United under the National Labor Relations Board standards. This is a rare move by an employer. Most employers spend a shitload of money fighting unions.
Yep, that's a smart move.
Yep, the union formed after staff cited layoffs, a wage and hiring freeze, leadership shifts, AI concerns, and being told to return to the office. The interim CEO, Jay Comas, said employees acted with courage, and the Dark Horse accepts an obligation to change. Dark Horse said it will enter good faith bargaining with Dark Horse Worker Union United to build a stronger workplace. That's fucking brilliant. No notes. 10 out of 10. Way to go, Dark Horse.
Yeah, they could have all been fired and gotten away with it, and Dark Horse would have gotten away with it, rehired new people who they could have treated like shit like they had before. Last time I saw anything like this happen was when a group of Costco employees went unionized, and Costco was like, oh, we were doing right by you, but absolutely no, we recognize your union, whatever you need, we will take care of you.
Costco's
they
awesome.
Always take care of their employees, so yeah.
I wish I could afford to maintain my membership there, if for no other reason than their gas prices.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yep. That Texas Blood is now in development at FX. The series, which will be written and executive produced by Jim Mickle and E.L. Katz, with Mickle set to direct, is based on the comic book series from Chris Condon and Jacob Phillips. Mickle previously served as a showrunner for Netflix's Sweet Tooth. That was good. That was an unsung hero of a show.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Currently working on the live-action Gundam movie as well. So that's really, really... I'm not going to read a list of producers because that's just fucking boring. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a neo-Western series that follows Sheriff Joe Bob Coates as he deals with crime, violence, and dark secrets in fictional Ambrose County, Texas. So I've read a couple of these. It's good.
This is a wonderfully dark one. It reminds me a lot of what was that Western Sheriff when we were watching there? Longmire.
Oh, Longmire.
It reminded me a little bit of Longmire, because the sheriff isn't your standard superhero looking dude, you know.
Looks
he's
like a sheriff.
Guy who's, yeah, he looks like a sheriff. He's just this old guy who's finally got elected. You know, he's old enough to be elected to the job, and the world, you know, this Texas town is turning to shit on him, and it's great. It's such a great one, and I love that it's going to be on FX. Means it'll be on Hulu. I can watch the fucking thing.
Oh, without... that's delightful.
Because the last few have been on Amazon, and I'm like, I don't have Amazon. So yeah, that's been fun.
I get you.
That's gonna be great.
Batman has a new bat signal. Mm-hmm. In absolute Batman.
Oh no, this is in Batman.
Oh, this is Batman. Batman. Oh, so anyway, yeah. Batman's new bat signal is controlled by Batman, and mm-hmm. it's made out of drones hidden all over Gotham.
Yep.
It's no longer for Commissioner Gordon to call Batman when he needs.
Final page of Batman.
Very nice.
Number 10.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's new and different.
Yep. Yeah, so this is it's funny because they had the bat signal, and then Gordon got replaced. The mayor came down on them using the bat signal, and then fucking Vandal Savage took over as the commissioner of Gotham.
Mm.
Vandal Savage. And he was like, absolutely not. So Bullock, who's now a private investigator because he got his ass fired from the force for standing up to Vandal Savage, he would hang a little toy bat outside of his window that would call Batman, which was hilarious. But this one is it's a light up. It's all these drones that fly in, and it's more of him calling out to Gotham and remember that he is there than being able to use it to call him in to help them.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause Batman now lives in Gotham. Wayne Manor is gone. Literally. He lives in Gotham. He just, that's where he stays. And he kind of has some brownstones and underground areas. Bruce Wayne stays in Gotham. And yeah, it's like, there's no need to call Batman in to help. There's way too much shit, especially when you've got Poison Ivy as the mayor and Vandal Savage as the commissioner for the police. It's like Batman's got his hands full right now.
Man, I am missing out not reading this Fraction run. I wish I had some money.
Yep.
Wouldn't that be nice? What else have we got going on this week? We have another wave of Stan Lee's 80s. Spider-Man newspaper comics are hitting Kickstarter. Clover Press has launched a new Kickstarter campaign for soft cover collections of the 1980s Spider-Man newspaper strips by Stan Lee, with art by Iron Man co-creator Larry Lieber, Airboy artist Fred Keita, Transformers artist Floro Derry. By the quote from Clover Press publisher Hank Connells, is by the early 1980s, Spider-Man was firmly established in the newspaper page. Following the success of our campaign to collect the first 4 years of Amazing Spider-Man newspaper comics, we're thrilled to continue the line. This should excite you, yes?
Yeah, no, this is really awesome. I didn't care for how much it costs to get them. They don't really tier very well on Kickstarter. So, and they don't offer a digital option. You have to buy the omnibus, and you have to buy all four omnibi, so it's $100 to get all four. And then if you want the slipcover, it goes up. If you want the extra drawing, it goes up. If you want the t-shirt, it goes up. That's fine, but I need some earlier tiers. Not that they need to worry about it, they're making bank already. So yeah, there are plenty of people who bought in at the $100 rate. I was just like, oh, this is not, I can't really justify this cost.
No, I get you.
As much as I want to read all of these and collect everything that Stan Lee ever wrote for, you know, the Spider-Man newspaper strips, because this was no longer Comics the Marvel Way by Stan Lee. He wrote these out and had an artist working with him that he would do this with. This was all he focused on, because by this point he was in Hollywood acting as a producer for all their animated stuff. And he was no longer writing comics really for Marvel, so he didn't have that schedule he had back in the 60s, where he would just give them an outline or a one paragraph idea of the story and turn the artist loose to actually create a story for him and then write the dialogue over the top of it that could actually change what the artwork meant. In this case, he was writing these stories and having people work on it, you know, having Larry Lieber work on it with him or whoever. And it was good stuff back then.
Yep. Very nice. The boycott of DC Comics due to a lack of black-led titles has been called off. The Black Comics Alliance is calling off the protest. However, the DC's So White campaign will continue to draw attention to the issue, although the boycott ignited a lot of commentary and spotlighted the lack of a single ongoing title starring a black character in DC's main continuity. The protests also faced criticism on social media. Concerns were raised that it would harm black creators currently working at DC Comics and that it was overlooking other marginalized groups. Because if there's one thing that gatekeep culture in comics does, keeps it white.
Yep.
Very, very white.
It really does. It really does keep it white. And the other problem is that you can come, and I was thinking about this, you know, with the blackout. I'm like, yeah, you're right. There is no main black character getting a comic book. I wonder why they don't have, why they aren't, you know, because basically they would be published. They would be printed if they got the sales that DC wants. And we've watched as critically acclaimed books have been canceled because of lack of pre-order. And it's the same thing. I mean, every book I've read featuring a black character, I'd read the first issue and I'm like, gee, I wish this was better each time. And it has nothing to do with I'm white and I don't have that experience, so I can't understand it. It just isn't that good of a story. And it's taking away, you know, from it. So I'm like,
and it feels editorial.
Yeah.
It feels, because I'm gonna go ahead and throw Marvel under the bus for a second here.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I'm not. I'm going to put them on a pedestal. Like, having them bring Ta-Nehisi Coates in.
Yeah.
An amazing fucking writer to write black characters, you know, was great. Everything he wrote was good. You know, even he had that run on Captain America for a while, as I recall.
Yeah.
And I understand giving younger writers a shot, but that's what annuals are for, as opposed to you trying to save money soft launching a black title by grabbing a kid, you know, that's basically, you know, willing to work for peanuts and doesn't have the experience, so that you don't have to pay out of pocket for a more seasoned writer who happens to have lived the black experience. I think that's why it falls short every time.
And there was a level of abandonment. Because they did the Milestone Initiative a few years ago, because my artist Greg and my other artist Taya were both part of the Milestone Initiative.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this was the inaugural one. There has not been one since that I've heard about. And these creators of color, I don't see them writing and drawing for DC on a regular basis. You know, they thought they were going to get a good job with DC or something like that, and instead most of them are working for, you know, I've got two working for IDW. That Greg is one of them, and then the writer he worked with on the Uhura story, both are working for IDW now. There's several others that are just doing their own thing. Taya works for me. My publisher's Laguna. So it's like, nobody's working for DC. So that didn't come together the way it was supposed to. And I'm like, if you want to recapture the magic that was Milestone, you need to have I know Reggie Hudlin's dead. You need to find somebody who has that kind of level. And they were found with Milestone Project, and you didn't pick any of them up.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get Ta-Nehisi Coates. He's done with comics for now. So, yeah, who are you going to get?
It's a good question.
Well, I will say Joe Mullen has been sort of the main character in Absolute Green Lantern more than anybody else. And John Stewart has been sort of the main character in that as well as Green Lantern Corps has had both John Stewart and Joe Mullen as central figures. So at least DC's got that going for him. But
I mean, come on, one fucking title is all these guys are asking for.
Yeah, one title.
Yep. So there it is. Anyway, that's it for the news.
All right. Well, let's talk about what we've been reading this week. This should be quick. Jeff?
Yep. Marvel Thor Omnibus by Matt Fraction.
Anything to add about that one?
Not a thing. It's Thor being Thor. Mm-hmm. So,
well, speaking of Matt Fraction, his wife, Kelly Sue DeConnick, finally put out FML number 8.
Oh, good.
I was fortunately remembering what happened in 7, so it was fun to read. This was absolutely the best wrap-up of this story. I mean, there was a moment where they have this cop who's helping them, and they're standing in the jailhouse talking to the husband, who's Matt Fraction, basically, and the son, and this guy. And the cop is speaking in the radio, and it's like, you know, this is ridiculous, blah, blah. And they're like, this is Chinatown. She's like, we're in Portland, and... She's like, he had to be a fucking movie buff, didn't he? And then just a few minutes later, they're talking, and then the thing that comes through is, welcome to Act 3. I was like, ah, there we go. There's the writer giving me a signal as to what's happening.
There you go.
I loved it. Got a little confusing in the middle. I was like, it didn't quite flow from page to page. I was like, are these pages out of order? No, they don't seem to be out of order, but why is this... Why we have jump back, jump forth without knowing that they're moving back and forth? It was like you're counting on the reader to pick up on a lot of stuff that you know in your head as the writer, but isn't necessarily getting translated on the page.
Yeah.
So that's a tough one. Anyway, we come to the end, and she said, this is the end of the first arc of FML. I was like, well, that's good, because I really like FML. I'd like to see it continue. And the next FML will be written by Matt Fraction.
FML?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and that one we'll cover, because this one was more about the mom and the son, which is basically it was Kelly Sue and her, you know, raising her oldest son.
Mm-hmm.
And all the, and him going through his adolescence and teenage years. And now he's going off to college, which she felt was like the most ironic thing to happen as they launch into FML, as they finish up this final story arc. But then Matt's taking over, and he's going to write about their youngest, their daughter. So it's the relationship between the dad in the story and the daughter. And she's like, it's Matt and it's David Lopez, and both are dads with daughters, and they're doing this story. And I was like, yes, this is going to be cool. Can't wait to read it. So,
well, that's exciting,
and it'll have the same outrageous, crazy shit that FML has. So, which I'm loving.
Yeah,
and it's always topical too, which is hilarious. Her almost getting hit by the door of an airplane as she's walking her dog, you know, in Portland, and I'm like, that's making fun of Boeing, you know, with their parts falling off and everything. I'm like, that's not something you can write 4 years out and then wait for the art to be done. That had to have been written just a few months ago, and now you're waiting for the art to get done.
Yeah.
So she's getting the art done, and that's the thing, is she's writing it quickly and topically and then waiting on art, which is why the books take so long to come out. And here's Matt over here writing Batman, and it's like, well, let's see what FML looks like when you know, if they're trying to keep it topical and current.
I am your dad.
I'd like to see him be Bat Dad, and that'd be hilarious.
Yeah. I'd love that.
Anyway, that is it. So let's do our
Take a break.
Take a little break. Then take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to do our picks of the week and the future.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
In a world where MAGA is banning and burning books, it is a revolutionary act to read. It's Monday in America is a bold collection from the left show's J.M. Bell about politics, family, aging, and the uncomfortable truths we keep avoiding. No talking points, just real life in a divided country. Order your copy of It's Monday in America today for just $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. If you're looking to feel hopeful or inspired, or if you're just frustrated and unsure about where we're headed, this book provides a unique look at the life of a Gen X liberal, the challenges and victories, and the question, what kind of world have we built for our children? It's Monday in America. $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. It's Monday in America. Better to die on your feet than live on your knees.
Hey, this is Elena Huffman, Abaddon on Supernatural, and you are listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
You pick up the hearts that break to make your ego high. And I was just your pick of the week.
All right, Jeff, what are you grabbing this week off the shelves?
We're going to go ahead and start with mainstream, and I'm actually going to do mainstream comics this week as opposed to losing my place last week.
Happens to all of us.
It does. The Impossible Escape, DC Finest team-ups. Impossible Escape brings together some of the most thrilling and unexpected superhero pairings from DC's Bronze Age. Ah, the Bronze Age. Featuring classic stories from The Brave and the Bold and Super Team Family. So we got guys like Mr. Miracle, Green Arrow, Wonder Woman, Deadman, even Kamandi. So that one looks like a lot of fun. It's going to be $40, though. It's going to cost you $40 because it's one of the big ones. And then from Marvel, I am picking Jay and Silent Bob's Jays of Future Past because I love everything Kevin Smith does. I do, to one degree or another. Even Tusk. I love Tusk. It's a strange love. But yeah, Captain American J and Friendly Neighborhood Whiter Man, Silent Bob, make a quick stop in the Marvel Universe. But when Dr. Doom decrees these Jersey guys must die, the Fantastic Four, the Avengers, the X-Men, and a whole host of heroes must team up on a joint mission to save the idiots from a lethal case of superhero fatigue. I dig it. All right, what are your mainstreams?
You just reminded me, by the way, of another book I read because I get it digitally, so I've already read it. It wasn't in front of me. Dead Man number one was incredible.
Oh, good.
Absolutely incredible. Really well written, really crazy and dark and everything you want for Dead Man. And if you can find a copy, get it. If you want to get it digitally, it's available at Comixology at Amazon. Let's see. So my picks this week, for next week, we've got Avengers Armageddon number one, written by Chip Zdarsky.
Chip.
This is basically Chip Zdarsky destroys the Marvel Universe pretty much completely. So that'll be fun.
That is fun.
Because the next Avengers has, like, it's called Avengers the Survivors. It's like those who survive Avengers Armageddon. So we're going to see how all this works out. As Stan said, don't worry. In a few months, it'll all be back to normal.
Yep.
I figure since they've licensed out his voice for, you know, and likeness for AI, I can bring back the Ultimate Stan voice every now and then.
Okay.
Then from DC Comics, hard to believe this is DC Comics, but it is. Mad Magazine gets the 600th issue. 600 issues of Mad. 7.4 decades of Mad Magazine. Featuring brand new Mad favorites like A Mad Look At by Sergio Argonez, who's still drawing stuff for them.
Yeah.
Some Spy versus Spy, a new fold-in by Johnny Sampson, plus new Mad content created just for this special issue, including a whole slew of classic Mad movie and TV parodies from the usual gang of idiots. And this is the kickoff of the upcoming Mad 75th anniversary in 2027. There you go.
Outstanding.
Yep.
All right. What are your off-brand?
Okay, my indie picks this week from Image Comics. I love Jay Lee. And here we go. We got an ongoing series launch from Jay Lee, M1 Monster Racing League number 1. When 17-year-old Dev moves to Japan, she stumbles into an underground world of illegal street racing where speed is power and mutation wins championships. This high-octane sci-fi drama set in a near-future Tokyo is fast and furious by way of K-pop demon hunters. And you get Jay Lee drawing it, so that's going to be fucking awesome.
Did I ever tell you the weirdest thing I found out during Dad's funeral weekend was that my sister, who is several years older than I am, watches K-pop Demon Hunter?
Oh, really?
She fucking loves it. She just thinks it's great.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, okay, from Dark Horse Comics, for those of us who would be missing Kelly Sue DeConnick, because she's, you know, FML is done, we have Skate Alley. Skate Alley, welcome to the near future Los Angeles. Everything's near future. A neon-scorched city where skateboarding has been ruthlessly outlawed. Sounds like current Los Angeles, but nothing stops Skate Alley. By day, she's just another student dodging detention. By night, she's a rebel on wheels, an enigmatic loner defying the law on the Los Angeles streets. I'm digging it. It's Kelly Sue DeConnick, Sam Humphries, and they're co-writing that. And then you've got Natasha Bustos doing the art. She's the one from Moon Girl and Double Dinosaur.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is going to be a skate punk saga for all of us. So 5-issue limited series coming out from Dark Horse.
That sounds fun. Let's see. Man. I've got from Bad Idea. Tankers, they're breaking their rule. They put it in a trade.
Uh-oh.
I thought it was a dumb rule. It's one of the few things the Bad Idea said that they were or weren't going to do where I was like, that's stupid. Trades are awesome.
Oh. Yeah, and most people trade weight.
Yep. So this is Robert Venditti and Juan Jose Rip. He's doing Wolverine currently. But yeah, it's... Greenleaf Oil has discovered that the world only has 50 years of oil left, which means Greenleaf only has 50 years of profit left, but their enterprising CEO has a harebrained scheme to change history. Using time travel technology, they will send a team of mercenaries armed with weaponized mech suits, tankers, back to the end of the Cretaceous period and deflect the asteroid that hit the Earth and killed all the dinosaurs. Chaos ensues. It's fucking great. I mean, it was really a lot of fun. And then Image Comics is releasing Sunstone Volume 3 in that new, smaller, easy-to-carry-around size. Stefan Sejic, Sunstone, it's a love story like no other. And now it's in the 6x9 edition featuring all-new cover art. I think I've told you guys this before. It's lesbian BDSM, but it's classy and tasteful. I don't know how to explain it better than that. But yeah, that's Sunstone, it's Volume tasteful, 3.
Okay. I love it.
Yeah, it's not for the male gaze, per se. You know? It just tells a story, and this happens to be part of the story, as opposed to the driving force for the story, which you see with a lot of smut comics, where it's like, I want to see this and that and the other, and here's the story to connect them and give me what I want, whereas this one's just about them, and then from time to time, there's a little nudity. Mm-hmm. A little naughty nudity. But yeah, I dig it, and we'll continue to dig it. I think it's fun. Anyway, that's it for me.
All right, let's jump in the TARDIS, and we're going to head to August to give our picks of the future. All right, welcome to August of 2026. We're going to tell you what's going to be on the shelves. As always, if you're excited to get this issue, you need to run, don't walk, to your friendly neighborhood comic book shop and order it. That way, the company that we're talking about knows to print them, and the shop knows to order them for you. So, there you go. Start us out, Jeff. What is your pick of the future?
This is coming in from Mad Cave. It's called Denver. It's written by Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray. Art by Pierre Brito. In a near future... Oh, man. Yeah, you're right. That's everywhere.
Everything's near future.
In a near future world, I think it's so they don't have spaceships.
Yes.
Drowned by rising oceans, Denver survives as one of the last tightly controlled safe zones on the planet, where every resource is rationed and every citizen is monitored. So...
This is a very near future.
Yep. Yep. But you know me in Denver. I love Denver. I'll read anything named Denver. Yep. I even listen to John Denver. You know, because sunshine on my shoulder makes me happy.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you got for the future?
Not you. Okay. let's see. From Marvel Comics. An all-new, all-disturbing universe begins here. The clock strikes midnight, and it's the dark dawn of a new era. The shadows of New York City are stalked by vampires and the mutant empires. And that's empire spelled with a Y.
Okay.
The sword of Damocles hangs over the peace between these two species and the factions within them. An outright war is brewing, and the unturned will be caught in the crossfire. Blockbuster comic book writer Jonathan Hickman returns to the X-Men with a hunger for blood as this new world of terror reimagines the heroes of the Marvel Universe in Midnight X-Men number one.
Fun.
It's wild. You've got the cover's got Storm as a vampire, which happened in the pages of Uncanny X-Men itself. And then Nightcrawler is dressed up like a priest with a sword. So he's basically the vampire hunter. This is going to be just going to be dark and crazy. Can't wait.
Yep. Sounds there good.
Jonathan Hickman. It's going to be awesome. And we wondered what Marvel Midnight was going to be about. There it is. There's the answer.
Good to know. Knowing being half the battle.
The other half is fighting it. G.I. Joe. That's it for our picks. We're going to take another break. And when we come back, we're heading to Tinseltown.
My name is Peter Davison. I played the Fifth Doctor. And you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Hey folks, Jeff here. So, you want to start a podcast? Maybe you already did and it's just not going the way you thought it would. Well, here's the truth. It's not about the mic, it's not about the software, and it's definitely not just about posting episodes. It's about building a show that people care about. That's why I created the Defenestrate Media Podcast Academy. It isn't theory and it isn't fluff. It's a step-by-step breakdown of what actually works. Choosing a name, choosing a topic, building your structure, growing an audience, trying to turn your podcast into a brand, and maybe even a business. If you're serious about podcasting, this is a good place to start. And if you're just tired of guessing, this is how you stop. Check out the Defenestrate Media Podcast Academy and build something worth listening to. You can find more information at thecomicbookpodcast.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to me on the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Wah, wah, wah!
All right, sir. Let's see. The commonality is Wrexham. So what have you watched this week that wasn't Wrexham?
That's not the one I thought we'd pause on this week.
No.
I've suddenly forgot her name, but the newest Tomb Raider movie?
Mm-hmm.
Vikander. Alicia Vikander.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I liked the movie. I did. Okay. I liked it. I thought she should have got a sequel. I don't know if it did poorly or what, because I wasn't paying that much attention, but...
It did not do well in the theaters for some reason.
Probably because the Comicsgate guys were pissed off she didn't have big boobs.
Something like that. But that really was a factor, the fact that her boobs weren't big. They were like, what? What's wrong with that? Why isn't she have big boobs? Get back Angelina Jolie. I'm like, Angelina Jolie's too old to play the role.
Yep, you know, and Haley Atwell was doing
not in the
Captain
face.
America.
She still looks great, but like physically, she would struggle to play that role. So
yeah, because when you get old, your bendy parts start to hurt.
Yep.
All right, I'm not proud of this, but I watched Pitch Black, Chronicles of Riddick, and Riddick. They showed up on Netflix, and I was like, oh, what the fuck? And
Have yourself a Vin Diesel time, huh?
It's all really what it was leading to was Riddick, which had Katie Sackhoff in it.
Yeah.
You know, and she was great in that movie. Everybody was great in that movie. These Riddick movies were a lot of fun. I caught myself. I put them on to have something in the background I didn't have to pay attention to. But you've got a couple of like my hugest Hollywood crushes in Pitch Black. It's Claudia Black from Farscape.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I love Claudia Black. And then in Riddick, it was Katie Sackhoff. Mm-hmm. And in Chronicles of Riddick, it was Judi Dench.
There you are.
Why not? She's got gravitas. And I think we've already established that I have a thing for older women.
I love Judi Dench to no end. Yes.
I love her voice. I love to hear her talk. And then Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yep.
We'll be talking about that this week over on Gen Zex at theleftshow.com on Wednesday. We'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about the video game Portal 2. Portal 2. If you haven't ever played Portal 2, you are in for a great time. It is some of J.K. Simmons' best work. It really is. Him and Stephen Merchant are in it, and they're just amazing. But other than that, what did you watch?
Not much to report, except last night we got Interview with the Vampire, Season 3, The Vampire Lestat. And for those who have enjoyed these books, as I had back in the day, this guy playing Lestat is Lestat. I mean, I love Stuart Townsend in Queen of the Damned. Tom Cruise was fine in Interview with the Vampire, but I was glad they replaced him with Stuart Townsend. But this one, I mean, oh my God, it is so good. And they're sort of merging books together a little bit. So it's got a little bit of Queen of the Damned, and then they'll do flashbacks into what was Vampire Lestat, which was him telling his story. There's music that I was like, the trailer fooled us, because the trailer had him doing a cover song. I thought, are you just going to have Lestat doing cover songs? I mean, his whole thing was he was writing music about his life. He was writing songs about his life. Oh, no, we get original songs right there.
Oh, very nice.
Concerts with original songs, these rock concerts. And the fact that he hasn't revealed his true nature to his band yet, even though he's constantly walking in with someone in his arms that clearly has a bite on her neck and is carrying her through. It's like, it's hilarious. That they haven't picked up on it until the end of the episode. So yeah, no, it's delightful. He's definitely this happened in the books. He's basically kicking off a war of the vampires because Louis revealed them, and then he's just jumped on board to reveal them even more. So yeah. But there is a moment in the near future after all the chaos has happened, where they're selling off a couple of lots from Lestat, and it was, you know, that's how it opens, with this kind of auction. And I was like, this is interesting. Okay, I can't wait to see where this goes. So yeah, really good series. Looking forward to continuing to watch that. And then, of course, we had Wrexham.
Good episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's ironic because you've talked about how you've seen all the games. But to see the behind the scenes of it, like Ollie Palmer getting to come back after being injured.
Yeah.
And just what a huge fucking difference he made to the team. You know, busting out, scoring goals right out of the gate. To see the comeback of the goalie and to have that be a point of drama in the documentary, whereas I'm sure in the games it was a point of drama that he kept, you know, missing balls. But at the same time, you're like, yeah, but he knows what he's doing. Why is he, what's he got the yips for, you know?
Yeah.
And he's just got to get past it. That was my whole thought on that one, was he's just got to get past that.
I'm a huge fan of Rathbone.
Mm-hmm.
Ollie is, I mean, he's a game changer. He makes shit happen.
Ollie Palmer. Yeah.
Yeah. He makes chances happen. Mm-hmm. And takes advantage of them when they're you know, leaning towards him, and I just dig it, you know.
The previous week had them playing against their rivals in South Wales at the big Welsh Cup thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what a difference it would have made if they'd had Ollie back by then. So
yeah but no, it's another attempt to tear jerk me.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I had an emotional response.
Yeah.
You know, obviously. So, but
there's some beautiful moments in it. Yeah, definitely the lady with the cancer and
yep.
everything else that was going on. Because I was like, there was one shot. I'm like, that hair doesn't look like her hair used to look. Oh, and then you know she's got this. You know, kind of pixie cut everything. Oh, and then I was like, oh, she's wearing a wig, and this was filmed post that, but pre that, and everything. Yeah, it was great
episode. Good emotional feel. Good tracking the wins and the losses. All of that.
Yep.
Really good swearing. I liked. Was it last week with the wheelchair?
Last week, with the kid in the wheelchair. Yeah.
Oh, that kid was amazing.
And they kept marking his enthusiasms, and then, you know, of course, the coach still wins with enthusiasms.
Yeah, I like that the kids' enthusiasms were over the course of several days, and Phil Parkinson's were in a few minutes.
Yes. As they would be.
Yeah.
I really dig Welcome to Wrexham. So,
Me too.
I've always liked football, but never gotten into it. It did break my heart that they had to go and break. They had to go beat North Preston because that's where my family's from.
Mm.
But I'm like, I'm not really a big North Preston fan, and you know, I'm either the Championship League or, you know, I don't really pay attention. And I knew they weren't in the Championship League, which is why I pull for Liverpool because that's the closer one. But yeah,
that's fair. That's fair. I mean, you know, most of the soccer that I watch is Championship League, just because there's more games. There you have 48 games a season, and Premier League only has 38. So Arsenal's my Premier League team. Wrexham's my Championship team.
Yep.
AFC Wimbledon is my next tier down team. You know, I've got them picked, and I can watch them all week. I mean, about the only thing that's really cool about the next few weeks is that I'm going to be watching nonstop football.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm so sorry, listeners, if we bore you with all of our football talk, because next week is World Cup.
Yep.
My teams are Scotland first, and then USA, and then whoever beats England, I guess, is my next team. So whoever comes out of the England's block. And thereby, even and unless it's England, then it's not going to be England. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Yep.
That is. Anyway, I have nothing else. You got anything else?
I don't have anything else.
Cool.
Let's do some Tinseltown news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
I didn't know we had two celebrity deaths this week that impact our community. And I really didn't know, do I put the weird one first or the beloved one first? And I went with weird. James Handy, who is a character actor who's been in fucking everything. Mm-hmm. If you saw a picture of him, you'd know exactly who I'm talking about. Was stabbed to death in Los Angeles on Wednesday by his girlfriend's son. San Fernando Valley in Tarzana Wednesday morning, a 911 caller said, "I am the son of man. I just killed the man of sin." They found 81-year-old in the front yard of a residence, unconscious and suffering from a stab wound to his chest. Paramedics took Handy to the local hospital, where he was pronounced dead. The 44-year-old suspect, who lives at the residence with his mother, flagged down responding officers, police said, telling them that he was the one they were looking for. Gledhill was arrested and transported to jail, where he was booked on suspicion of one count of murder. His bail has been set at $2 million, according to jail records. But yeah, he was in the Top Gun Maverick. He was in Jumanji. He was in NCIS Los Angeles, CSI New York, NYPD Blue, LA Law, everything. Jumanji. But yeah, he was. That's just weird. These weird celebrity kids and whatever.
This has been. I mean, because this is shades of what happened to
Reiner.
Rob Reiner. Yeah.
Yep.
Fuck.
And then the one. I mean, I'm sad about that. Maybe get me wrong. I know I'm callous, but
no, it's sad. It's sad.
Yeah, he's a great actor, and he was still working. Mm-hmm. So, and then the one that kind of hit a little closer to home, to where when I saw that it happened, I leaned over to Tiffany and I went, "Oh, JC's going to be bummed out." Yep. Me for Ted Lasso, you for Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Mm-hmm. But Anthony Head, British actor best known for roles in Ted Lasso, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and on the West End, the Rocky Horror Show, where he played Frankenfurter. Wonderfully. Yeah.
Let's not forget his appearance in one of the seminal episodes of the modern Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah.
Where Sarah Jane came back and K-9 came back. He was the bad guy. He was the one, he was the horrible headmaster of that school.
I'd forgotten.
The Doctor and Rose were investigating. So, yeah, it was, I mean, it was one episode. So they're like, well, he was just in one episode. I'm like, yeah, but this was that episode. This was a huge one. You know, it's like it was huge that he was in it.
Yeah. Anyway, he passed away peacefully of complications due to pneumonia. Surrounded by his family.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
Friends and family out to kill everyone.
Someone should get Poirot out there to investigate.
Yes.
It is with heavy hearts that we announce the death of our extraordinary father. It has been and forever will be an honor and a privilege to be his daughters. And we have witnessed firsthand the impact both he and his work have had on so many. He played a lot of bad guys.
Oh, yeah.
But
he was good at it.
According to friends and family, he was just the sweetest fella. Mm-hmm. He was so good in Ted Lasso, you know, as the evil rich guy, the ex-husband. He was just wonderful. He was so easy to hate. So
it was so funny to hear them. The Buffy cast talk about how when they met him, they're like this hippy dippy guy, and all of a sudden he is just straight laced Giles, you know, the Watcher.
Yep.
Always in a suit, you know, always cleaning his glasses whenever the kids start making out or whatever, so he doesn't have to see it. I thought that was delightful. And he was the father figure. He was the father figure in the show and important for the series. And yeah, I heard a story about him. A transgender fan. I had gone and gotten a bunch of headshots and other photographs of Anthony, signed by him at a con. And I guess had reached out to him to say, "Hey, it's no longer my name that's on these images. Is there anything we can do?" Anthony invited this person out to his home, his farm in Britain. Picked them up at the train station, drove them there. They had like a 5-hour conversation.
Uh-huh.
He always got their pronouns correct the entire time.
Oh, yes, but of course.
Reshot those photos that they had on his farm, you know, recreated the photos, had them printed there and autographed for the fan before sending them on their way.
Sweet.
I mean, this man was one of the most delightful human beings ever to exist, and it's sad that he's gone now at 72, you know, from pneumonia. Yeah.
And his family.
And his family.
And his family.
Family. The family game.
Oh,
yeah. I want to write this story.
The family of Nichelle Nichols has been awarded $13 million in a lawsuit. TV and Film Icons Estate was awarded $13 million as a result of a wrongful death lawsuit against the Gila Medical Center in Silver City, New Mexico, where Nichols was treated in 2022. Yeah. Gila Regional Medical Center was 40% liable in the case, with one doctor being found 60% liable and another doctor being 0% liable. But basically, she checked in, they got it wrong, she died. And now the family estate has a little bit more money. And then wrapping up really quick, I've got two pieces of news that don't really need a lot of time. The Stargate TV series at Amazon has been canceled. Mm. I am heartbroken. So this is the funny one. According to an individual with knowledge of the situation, Amazon execs were concerned that Garrow's take on the series would not have broad appeal beyond the franchise's already dedicated fan base. Well, then change the pilot. Once you're in, you're in.
Yeah, once you're in, you're in. And I'm sorry. They have a very dedicated fan base. And the only one that's even a bigger dedicated fan base is the Star Trek The Next Generation fan base, and we've seen Paramount just flat out fucking refuse to do anything with that.
Yep.
Like, let's keep rebooting the entire franchise. Just show us the legacy actors one more time before they die, and they're dying off pretty fucking quick. Let's see what can we see what's going on at Deep Space Nine after all these years. I mean, we had it in Lower Decks, but can we see it live action? That would be fucking awesome. Can we see what happened to the Voyager crew? We've only seen one or two of them since then, three of them since then. What happened to the rest? Did Harry Kim ever get a promotion? You know, there's all this stuff that fans really want to know, and you keep rebooting because they're like, we've got to find younger fans. And I'm like, you have existing fans that will have their kids watch it. They'll fall in love with it. Just like the kids that were just younger than us, whose parents were fans of the original series, had their kids watching Star Trek and fell in love with it.
Yep. War Machine, which you saw, Alan Ritchson's.
Yeah, Alan Ritchson's War Machine, as opposed to Marvel's War Machine, yes.
Right. A sequel is coming. Ritchson has not yet signed on. That's what we know. So that's it for the news.
He's owed some money, you know. I mean, that franchise was everything because of him, and if they do a story with him in it again, and he's got to go through the shit he went through the last one, which were, let's face it, they're like, well, they could do it with a new group. I'm like, why? We saw him get in the helicopter at the end, which he had no business getting into.
To go fight.
To go fight. He had no business getting in that helicopter after all the wounds he took, but he was off to fight. And it's like, let's see this, let's see this Army Ranger recruitment video go even further, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Well, I guess that's it for us this week. Anything else, Jeff?
Not a thing.
Well, I invite you, as always, to join us on Patreon at patreon.com/dfanmedia, where every week we have some extra content. This week, we don't have to give you the TV news segment because we got to it, but we do have one other piece of Tinseltown news, and this involves the Batgirl film that was canceled by HBO. And we have a list. The 10 best Alan Moore stories in comic book history.
Sounds exciting.
It's by David Harth, so you know we're not going to agree with it. Let's see how much of it we agree with. And that is coming up this week on Patreon. Join our Patreon squad. Help it become a Patreon platoon at patreon.com/dfnmedia. Until then, I will say, as I always do, until Matt Fraction is writing all the comics again, make mine Matt Fraction.
Oh, yeah, when she's not here, I gotta go first. For Asgard.
For Stan.